If you had a chance to share with a friend an audio snapshot of where we live, what would it sound like? What stories would you tell? Think of all the neighborhoods you visit each week and why each one of them is different. They all come with their own soundtrack, don't they? Hi, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. It's a new show on KSKA. I'm here with co-hosts Charles Woolforth and Kathleen McCoy, and each week we'll spend an hour with you exploring the rich and textured place that's our hometown. We'll find out what people are talking about, what matters to us, and we'll also introduce you to some pretty interesting folks, and we'll get to know each other a little better. We'll save you a place when you call in and share your thoughts and discoveries about Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage, right now, after the news from National Public Radio.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Paul Brown. Up to 8 suspects were detained at the Mexico City airport today after a hijacked Aeromexico jet carrying 112 people landed safely there. The plane had taken off from Cancun. Government officials tell news agencies that all the passengers are safe. TV images showed security personnel leading at least 5 people off the aircraft in handcuffs. The White House says the president's speech to a joint session of Congress tonight will include new specifics on what he wants to see in legislation modifying the nation's health care system. NPR's Don Gagne reports.
A senior administration official previewing tonight's speech says the critics who contend that the president is giving this speech to regain control of the debate after a difficult August are wrong. He argues that the White House health care strategy of not endorsing a specific plan, letting Congress hammer out the details, and encouraging a wide variety of voices to put forth proposals has worked. Now he says it's time for the president to pull many of these ideas together and to provide the clarity the public needs to understand exactly what Mr. Obama supports and to help Congress focus its efforts to get a bill to the president to sign by year's end. The White House promises Mr. Obama will make it clear tonight what he wants to see in the bill. Don Gagne, NPR News, the White House.
The U.S. says Iran is very close to having the capability to produce a nuclear weapon. That comment comes as the International Nuclear Watchdog Agency confirms Tehran is not fulfilling agreements to cooperate with the agency regarding inspections. From Brussels, Terry Schultz filed this report.
As the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, discusses its latest report on Iran, U.S. Ambassador Glenn Davies told fellow members, Washington believes Iran already has enough enriched uranium to produce a nuclear weapon. Davies said Tehran is trying to preserve that weaponization capability, even as it says it's preparing a proposal for negotiations with the UN Security Council in Germany, who are set to consider tougher sanctions. IAEA Chief Mohammed Al-Baradei said, while Iran has recently provided inspectors with greater access to 2 key sites as required by the UN.
On all other issues, however, relevant to Iran's nuclear program, there is a stalemate.
Despite this, Al-Baradei has publicly disagreed with the U.S. that Tehran is close to being able to produce a nuclear weapon. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
A congressional watchdog for the Troubled Asset Relief Program, or TARP, says the government should consider placing its stakes in General Motors and Chrysler in a trust. In a new report, the oversight panel says doing so would ensure independent oversight and more effectively manage a government exit from the company's affairs than the government could itself. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up 49 points today at 9,547. The Nasdaq was up 22, the S&P 500 up 7. This is NPR News. The recipients of this year's Kennedy Center honors have been announced. The annual list comes from across the arts and lately has included names from the world of rock music. NPR's Felix Contreras has this report.
The John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts annually recognizes artists for a lifetime of contributions to American culture through dance, theater, opera, motion pictures, television, and for the last decade, rock and roll.
Screen door slams, Mary's dress waves.
This year, Bruce Springsteen will be rubbing shoulders with film director Mel Brooks, pianist and composer Dave Brubeck, opera singer Grace Bumbry, and actor Robert De Niro. Over 170 artists have received the honor since 1978, and the list includes major innovators in the arts of the 20th century. The Kennedy Center Honors Gala will take place in Washington, D.C. on December 6th and will be broadcast on CBS on December 29th. Felix Contreras, NPR News.
The pressure is increasing on Republican South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford to resign. 61 of the 72 Republicans in the state House, where impeachment proceedings would begin, are now calling for him to step down. There are 51 Democrats and one empty seat in the South Carolina House. The governor has said so far that he will not resign. He admitted he left the state for 5 days to visit a mistress in Argentina without notifying his staff. A Republican California assemblyman is resigning after a video recording emerged in which he can be heard talking about extramarital sexual escapades with a lobbyist for the energy industry he helped regulate as a committee member. The recording of Assemblyman Mike Duvall quickly made the rounds of the blogosphere and TV. I'm Paul Brown, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Kauffman, the foundation of entrepreneurship, committed to growing economies and expanding human welfare. On the web at Kauffman.org.
Hi, and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Ellen Lockyer, and this is a brand new show. It's our maiden voyage, so to speak. And I'm sitting here in the studio with our two co-hosts. Soon there will be three co-hosts, but one of them is going to be kept under wraps.
Mystery
for
co-host.
The mystery co-host. She's in the studio, but we're not going to reveal her name yet. And they are Kathleen McCoy. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Ellen.
And Charles Woolforth. Hi, Charles.
Hi. Thanks for having us, I guess.
I'm not having you. This is your show, too.
And it's our
listeners.
Together.
Yeah, it's our listeners' show, too. I'm going to just prompt our listeners that they can reach us through the old email at hometownalaska@kska.org, or they can call us at 550-8433. 550-8433 in the Anchorage Bowl, or 1-888-353-5752 outside of Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752, because we are going to keep the call-in format, and we are very anxious to hear from our listeners as to what they want to discuss, because we're all a bunch of gas bags over here. We can talk endlessly. Both Charles and Kathleen are alumnae of the Anchorage Daily News and have gone on to other endeavors. Charles has been writing books, and Kathleen has been blogging, apparently.
Well, yeah.
And professoring.
Professoring and blogging.
Actually, I am not teaching. I am a staffer over at UAA, and I am working on telling stories from the university in video and audio podcasting. So that's what I went on to.
Okay, well, I want to get the show rolling a little bit. Why don't you I want to learn a little more about the background of both of you, and I'll tell you a little bit about my background, and then I want to get to stories. I mean, we are in an age when the old structure of information gathering and dissemination is collapsing, and a brand new way is literally being built before our eyes and our ears. I mean, the very fact that we have writers, newsprint writers, sitting in on a radio show now, making the transition to audio. And I hope someone told you that there is a universe between how you write for the ear and how you write for the eye.
They've told us.
Yeah.
Let's see how we do.
I was helping somebody edit a script, and it was for an audio production, and she kept saying, oh, writing in these flowery, flowery phrases. And I kept saying, you can't do that for the ear. You have to make it short and crisp. Mm-hmm. She kept saying, oh, well, you're dumbing it down. I'm not dumbing it down. I'm trying to make it that people will listen to. But anyway, Charles, ladies first. Kathleen, tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, where you came from and what you did and
okay.
How you're doing now.
Okay. Well, I've been in Alaska since 82, and I probably found it easy to come here because I was a Navy kid. And although my dad was never stationed here, I was used to moving. Used to moving a lot. And so it was easy for me to think about leaving Los Angeles, where I was working at the time, and coming up here. Before I came, I quit my job and I went bicycling in Europe. And really, that was a 6-month adventure. And at the end of it, I thought, where can I go where I can maybe get a job but still keep seeing new and exciting things? And I had a brother up here. And he said, well, you can always visit me. So I did. And I visited, then went back and quit my job and came up and got a job at the Nome Nugget, which was my first journalism in Alaska. It was still an independent newspaper up in Nome, Alaska.
It's still a pretty cool newspaper.
It's a very cool newspaper. And I went there and lived in the newspaper because the editor had, and I was trying to save money because I was pretty broke at the time, and so I lived there. And that was when Alaska had four time zones, so Juno would start calling about 7 in the morning. And it was one of those shops where you did everything. I mean, I reported, I sometimes folded the newspaper, sometimes built the ads. I mean, it was just, I was probably the only worker at the time. I think they've expanded now besides the editor and the photographer. So that was my break into Alaska, and it was fantastic. It was very exotic to be up there from Los Angeles. I remember being, you know, really amazed at what I was seeing and not really always sure how to interpret it.
So. Yeah. And the Nome Nugget's such a cool newspaper. If you're ever in Nome, you can go into the library there and look at the back issues that go all the way to the Gold Rush.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting to look at how little has changed in terms of this little town and the fact even the prices were as high or higher during the Gold Rush because there was so much inflation going on that, you know, the cover price of the newspaper hadn't changed very much. I thought that was really cool.
That is pretty amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, it was a great experience, and I found it both, you know, thrilling and scary, I have to say. I remember saying, I feel like I'm at the edge of the earth, and if I fell off, no one would really know. You know, it was an interesting feeling to have, and yet just met great people there, got to go out to lots of villages and see things I had never seen before. I still felt humbled by that because here were people who'd lived out here all this time and knew how to do it, and I was such a newcomer, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was challenging, really challenging for me. But
when did you go to the Daily News?
I got hired at the Daily News after less than a year at the Nome Nugget. I remember covering the Iditarod for the Nome Nugget, and I remember the editor giving me $200 and saying, you've got a ticket to Anchorage. Here's $200. Do what you can. And I ended up going in on a plane with four other people and writing weekly reports, which is way different from the radio coverage of the Iditarod or the Daily News coverage of the Iditarod. But I think that was a great experience, and I think maybe my Bush experience is maybe what helped me get hired at the Anchorage Daily News when they were in a big expansion. I came in with, I think, 10 people at one time when they were really growing. I remember Pete Dunlap-Scholl was in my class. I think Chris Medrid was in my class. And so it was a big, expansive time. And I have to say, working at the Anchorage Daily News was a thrill for me. It was 26 years, and it was a long time. And I had a lot of opportunities and worked with some amazing people there. And so I'm grateful for that. I was sad to leave. I decided that you know, it was going to contract, and I was a likely candidate for contraction, so I needed to do what was next. And I had started to dabble a little bit in electronic media, again, very rough, but I thought, well, I'm going to pursue that because I hope to stick with storytelling wherever I go. That's my thought about it. So.
Well, Charles, how about you? How did you end up at the Daily News?
Well, actually, my first job was at KSKA.
Oh. I revealing his long and checkered career.
That's right. It was quite a bit different. I grew up in Anchorage and went to Stellar for high school. And we did a lot of community involvement. And the project that I did was to come and produce a show on KSKA, I think, in the first year that it was on the air. And from that, when somebody suddenly quit, right when I was a high school senior, I came in and was a board operator and announcer and did news, and that's sort of my first taste of doing real news. I remember covering the end of George Sullivan's mayoralty in the election when Tony Knowles was elected mayor, and then I went away to school and came back and worked for the Homer News for a couple of years, which was a fantastic experience. Same thing, you know, you do everything from think of the story to paste it up and write the headlines, and the hardest journalism that I ever did, because you had to meet and talk to the people you're writing about the next day in the grocery store, and so you had to find a way of being truthful without making so many enemies that you couldn't live in the town. And that served me very well. You know, at a bigger newspaper, it doesn't matter that much.
No. Anonymity, I mean, it's amazing. We live in an age when people, well, there's many people who want to be anonymous, but there's many people who want a big profile. And yeah. I was always wanting to be a journalist behind the story, not the story. But things are changing, so.
Yeah. So I actually worked at the Daily News for only 4 years and went out on my own in 92. And haven't gotten a paycheck since. I've been freelancing.
That says a lot right there.
Well, my son's teacher said, well, good thing your wife has a paycheck. But actually put my wife through school, and she got her teaching degree as a freelancer, and had a couple of kids without any healthcare. So that was kind of doing things the hard way. And it's slowly a freelance writing career builds on itself, and slowly better and better assignments come in, and you can actually make your living that way. So, and then I get to sort of go off and do what I want to do. I live on the south side of Ketchikan Bay in the summertime, and in Anchorage in the winter, and get to spend a lot of time with my kids during the day and stuff like that. So it's great, and I'm really excited about doing this show because get me out of the house. you know, when you're a writer and you work by yourself, you're by yourself a lot. It's fun to get out and talk to people and do different things. And the fact that the show has been opened up to you know, four different hosts, I think is going to make it really various and interesting to look at. And our producer, Pat Yak, has talked about, you know, we don't want to just talk about politics and policy. We want to be kind of a community center or a place where we start to talk about defining Anchorage as a community with the different shows and the kinds of voices we get on the air. And mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
I think so, too. And just listening to your thumbnail sketches of your biographies here, I'm hearing similarities, amazing similarities between myself and the two of you. I, too, and people forget this now, but I started in newsprint. But I started on the Copper Valley Views out in Kennelake. And it was I was hired to be the receptionist and coffee maker, but it took me about one day to realize that they desperately needed a reporter because it was one of these weekly journals. It had been around for many years, but the fellow who wrote it pretty much put it in his opinions and a lot of advertising. And so I started reporting, and this is way back. This is like 1986, 7, about the time you came to Nome. And so I just – we had to do our own photography. The fellow I worked for had a dark room in his basement. We rolled our own film, and we processed our own film. I wish I knew how to do that now. I'd forgotten completely. And I went out and I found stories. There was no fax machine. There was no lobbyist sending you, you know, endless emails about this is a story, this is a story. You actually had to find your own stories, mm-hmm. which was great training. Mm-hmm. And one of my jobs was to drive the layout from Kennelake to Valdez at 5 o'clock in the morning on Wednesdays. Wow. And I would go over Thompson Pass and like all kinds of weather in my dying truck and take it to the printer down there and then wait 3 hours and then take it back. And then we would bundle it up and then we had to actually distribute it. We would get back in the truck, me and my boss, and drive all the way up to Paxton and to Nelchina and Eureka and mm-hmm. leave the. So it was pretty interesting in how newspapers 20 years ago still managed to survive despite hardly any financial backing. But the people really want the local news. Mm-hmm. My theory was people will buy a paper. They want to see pretty women, cute kids, or men at work on the front page. And if you have a photo with any one of those three things,
dogs,
they will buy that.
Dogs, animals. Yeah.
Well, this was 20 years ago. Dogs were pretty
they
much just they dogs.
Weren't yet,
they weren't
they were
surrogate
companions.
Children. And then I jumped over to the Cordova Times. I was one of a string of editors. And, you know, the high, exactly what you were describing.
I think that's
Nugget.
Where I met you during the oil
right,
spill.
Right, during yeah. the oil spill.
Wow.
So there we were. But you had to do the layout. You had to do the photography. You wrote the editorial. I was the editor reporter slash, and then they had another person for the advertising. And the highlight of my job, and I did, you know, my own photography, my own everything, was meeting the ferry. And in Cordova, you had to put it on the mock-up and the layout on the ferry. And you'd go down to the ferry dock at, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning in the driving rain and, you know, give it to
Ellen,
the purser. And they'd take it to Valdez to the printer.
You earned your street cred.
Yeah.
Well, those were the days. And you still – and I'm amazed at how journalism has changed, has grown, has got – became the sort of bloated thing and now sort of imploded. And now the we're seeing the rise of the citizen journalist. How do you feel about that?
I think it's got good and negative aspects. You know, on the good side, every little tiny town in Alaska now has some kind of website where they have their news. If you ever have looked at the Seldovia website, it's just amazing.
Oh, I haven't.
And you can
beautiful.
Find out every
it's beautiful.
Beautiful website, and every little thing that's happening in that town is there. So now a town the size of Seldovia can have a fantastic news source. And also, it's great that everybody can have their say. You know, on the downside, it's I don't think that the online community is really a community. I think a real community has to have a physical place where you relate to people who you don't maybe even want to relate to. And that means that there's got to be a place where everybody comes together at once. And that's what the newspaper was. You know, you found out, you know, you look there to find out, well, there's an important meeting happening or there's an event happening or something you want to be involved in. I was in the position of helping organize an event related to the library recently, and you can't get people out to that kind of thing anymore because the newspaper really can't cover it anymore, and there's no one single place that everybody goes to. And that's what I think, you know, public radio has become much more important than it used to be because it used to be one voice out there. Now it's one of the only places where the whole community is brought into one information source. You know, commercial radio is segmented into like five, you know, males 25 to 27, you know, each station is segmented out and it's all coming in by computer from somewhere else anyway. The blogs, people only read the blogs they agree with, right? You don't, there's no one place that people go and can talk about things with people they don't agree with. And public radio has really come into its own, and not only in Anchorage, but nationally as a model that works as a business model, doesn't have to rely on advertising, so that hasn't gone away. And with a big market share that more and more people are interested in listening, and hopefully people have many different roles in the community. And that's what, you know, hopefully what we can do is help perform that source of that community glue, you know, that place where people can come together and talk.
I think so. Something I was reading about online communities, I mean, in some ways I disagree, because when I think about Peter Dunlap Scholl's Parkinson's blog, if he wasn't doing that, a lot of things would not have happened. I mean, experts wouldn't have come to this, you know, community. But they do have a face-to-face component. They're a group that meets. Another group I read about, Spot.us, which is a new kind of community, a journalism community where reporters, you know, pitch their stories and the community reads them and maybe pitches $10 towards that story. And when they reach the amount, then they go ahead and do the story. But they've found that they need to have public meetings. They need to meet people who are supporting them. So they have pizza nights, and they sort of come on down and eat pizza and meet the reporters whose work you're funding. So there's a need to have some face-to-face contact and to, I guess, be in a tangible community in some fashion. So, I mean, we're on the air. We're on the airwaves, but we live in this community. So that's, you know, and I think the thinking was that we come from different parts of this community, so we'll bring in different parts of this community to the show, which is a hope.
Well, I do hope that we can maybe reach out and broaden the listenership, because I feel that often in public radio we have our niche and we have our niche listeners and rarely go beyond that. And, you know, and just to comment on something you were saying, Charles, we do have a strong listenership, but, you know, the money's always tight just because we're – don't ever confuse public radio with free radio.
Yeah, I understand.
And I know it's such an animal. And I was just going to say, though, getting back to the blog thing, Kathleen mentioned one of the cardinal rules of journalism, which is the reporter is not the story. The reporter completely stays out of the story. The reporter is objective. The reporter is distanced from the story. But with the blog, no such thing, because with the current tendency toward that type of information dissemination has, I think, collided head on with this sort of need for the 15 minutes of fame. And well, take a look at the rise and the extreme popularity of so-called reality shows. Of course, now we're finding most of the reality shows are staged reality shows.
Right.
So where are you? Where's the line? Yeah. But let me just take a moment here to remind our listeners that this is still a call-in program, and we are in our very first Hometown Alaska airing. So we would like to hear your input, your emails, your comments about what direction you would like the show to take, and What kind of guests would you like us to talk to, and what kind of themes are out there that we're not hitting on? So you can call us at 550-8433, 550-8433 in Anchorage or outside of Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752. That's 1-888-353-5752, or shoot us an email at hometownalaska@kska.org. And remember, always, you can find all the information about everything there is to know on KSKA at our website, kska.org.
And taking requests at the bandstand, right? We want to hear show ideas too, because I'd love to see the show become interactive in the way that we're responding to what people want to hear and what they want to have information and discussion about.
Right. I think we'd like to make use of the website, you know, invite people to, you know, if we know what the topic is next week, they can post some questions there early or, you know, suggest guests. I mean, any way to let this not be the truth being rolled downhill is what I'm in favor of. Mm-hmm. And I think this community has a lot of different and interesting people in it, and we don't have to touch the same topics at all. So,
well, so what are some of the things you'd like to bring to the show, Charles?
Well, I'm really interested in Anchorage history. Maybe it's because of growing up here and seeing it change so much. You know, I'm not that old a guy, but I kind of remember when the town kind of ended at you know, Northern Lights and Sea, and now it's much, much larger. And I'd like to talk about how we got the way we are. You know, what are the forces that made Anchorage the way it is, and who did it and why? And one thought I've had is to have a show where we just have people call in and talk about, well, why are they here? You know, how did they get to Anchorage? And part of that is, of course, what do you want out of the town? There's been, you know, different reasons people come. Are they coming to make a quick buck and leave? That used to be the case. But now I think a lot of people come because they want to make their home here and stay. And how does that affect the kind of community we want to build? So I'd like to talk, you know, one of the themes I want to talk about is, you know, Anchorage history. What is Anchorage? Does Anchorage really have a heart? Does it have a soul? What is that? How do we define ourselves as Anchorage residents? And that's a big topic and a tough topic, because I think that, I mean, in all honesty, that's one of our shortcomings as a city is sort of our self-definition.
I think one of the rules of thumb when I was at the newspaper was that the readership turns quarter of the readership turns over every year. So you're constantly having new people come into the community that really don't have the same background. And that's a great opportunity, and it's a challenge too. So you're right. I think I'm a little different from you. I'm thinking really much more if I have an overarching theme or a topic that animates me and scares the heck out of me, it's the speed of change that we're experiencing, that everybody's experiencing. And I'm one of the things I'm doing is going back to school. And I'm Ellen, you'll appreciate this. I'm taking digital audio production so that I understand the radio and can do what you already know how to do. But I'm taking a class in the business school on change, and it's just basically aimed at teaching business students how to understand the audience they're dealing with, because they're changing so much. And it's fascinating to think about the speed and how much has changed just in my lifetime, and I can't even imagine between now and my daughter's lifetime. So that interests me a lot. I think it's changing the way we behave and what we do and how we think. And so I'm interested in those kind of topics. And I was thinking, well, I think we were going to say, you know, what kind of person would we like to interview? And at first I didn't have a single person. I had, you know, I thought about newcomers. I'm really interested in these newcomers because they bring some kind of freshness to our town. And conversely, I'm interested in entrepreneurs because I think they're going to bring the future. And I think we're going to move into just this amazing entrepreneurial age where we may have reporters who don't work for newspapers but actually have a brand and a website, and people go to them because they do a very good job of gathering important news and filtering it for you. So, but I did think of one person I did want to interview, and it's she's not a newcomer or an entrepreneur, or maybe she's a social entrepreneur. It's Lynn Ballou from Beans Cafe. I have been hearing about her my whole life, and I've read about her, and she now has a new venture called, I think, Safe Haven. And I just think this is somebody who's always working to solve the problem.
Yeah.
And so if I was going to get to interview somebody, I'd love to interview her. She fits in, I think, as a social entrepreneur, but basically somebody who's really solving problems. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. So,
well, I came up in 76, speaking of change. And when I came up to Anchorage, it was this dreary cinder block city that had charming little downtown areas that were eventually all torn down for one reason or another. But there wasn't much going on. It was all bars, and then more bars, a lot of drinking, a lot of drug abuse, a lot of things that Anchorage went
life.
From a tiny town to the pipeline town. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I think the local authorities were just totally overwhelmed. And then for I lived here 8 years, and it was a pretty dreary place to live, I remember. And then I moved out to the bush for 10 years. And when I came back, I think, to Anchorage in 92, Anchorage had started its renaissance. And I'm constantly amazed at how pretty it's become and how varied it's become and how many wonderful things there are to do here. Not that I need somebody to show me what to do. I mean, there's always the bike path. There was always recreation. I mean, you'd have to be totally a numbskull not to find something to do in Alaska, but
that's true.
But a lot of those things are the product of epic battles and people who developed a vision for the community and then went out and fought for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the renaissance of Anchorage is very much in that category. You know, these things don't happen sort of evolutionarily, I don't think. I think they happen because people develop a vision of what they want the community to be, and then they go out and build it.
I mean, that's the story of Chugach State Park, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was people who were using that area and decided they wanted to save it. And I can't quote the names, but I've read the history.
And the bike trails, Lenny Fleischer is the mother of the
that's
bike
right.
trails.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a brief break because we have a caller. Hi, Carolyn, you're on air.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I got to Fairbanks in 67, and you talk about a different community, and Fairbanks and Anchorage fought over every little thing, and I thought this makes no more sense than Jacksonville and Miami fighting over the well, they had more to fight over. That's my original home state. And the differences in the cities, I think, would be a wonderful thing to look at. But my main topic is highlighting the unheralded. There are so many people that don't make the news, and I think Lynn Ballou is certainly one of them. Safe Harbor is a place that I've been donating to for years. That is, you know, that is just a wonderful, wonderful place. And that makes this community, it gives it a soul. It gives it something more than the things that we look at as being important for a city.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that would be one. And also, you know, if people can just call in or email in and come up with topics for the future. Someone once described Betty Fahrenkamp, in fact, who was a senator from Fairbanks, said that in Fairbanks, when trouble comes, they circle the wagons and shoot at each other, which I thought was hysterical. And she meant it in a loving way. I mean, you know, you've got to love something, warts and all. And Anchorage, someone described that as not that they intentionally closed off, but their vision just kind of fuzzied out on the edges. You know, there was nothing else important going on. And since I had a statewide view for a number of years in the work that I did, and I got to travel to over 30 villages and communities, so I feel exceedingly lucky. I was just frustrated by how little we knew of the wonderful things going on throughout Alaska.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that could be something, you know, with the communications being so easy now and reasonably priced,
mm-hmm.
that if we could focus on some of those things, I think it would certainly help draw us together.
I love that idea about heralding the unheralded. I was thinking about that as they were talking during the news about the Kennedy Center honors and that they're going to give an award to Bruce Springsteen and Robert De Niro. And think, oh, boy, those guys probably really need a big boost for their egos, right? They're probably feeling kind of down. Whereas if we could go, you know, if people could send in emails, you know, to hometownalaska@ksk.org and make some nominations, there's probably tons of people we've never heard of that are doing fascinating stuff that would be great to have on the air.
Yeah.
Well, that was one thing that they did in Fairbanks when they celebrated the 25th year of statehood. One artist, and I'm having a terrible time remembering her name, she highlighted 25 Alaskans and painted beautiful portraits of them, and they're in the they're downtown on 2nd Avenue and Cushman in a building down there that used to be the old federal courthouse. And that was stunning to people because these were people they had never heard of. They never made the news, but they were people who had contributed a tremendous amount to the community of Fairbanks. So, again, I think there is a place for that, and I certainly welcome you folks. I think it's terrific that you're on the air, and I'm looking forward to many more years.
Thank you, Carolyn. Okay, thanks for listening to Hometown Alaska. We're going to go to break. We take a short break. You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA.
Thank you.
Hi, welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm Ellen Lockyer, and as you have, if you've been listening in, you know that this is a brand new show on KSKA. My co-hosts are here, Kathleen McCoy and Charles Woolforth, both formerly of the Anchorage Daily News and now in other endeavors involving journalism, writing, and all that good stuff. We are still a call-in program, and I'm going to take this call. Jack, you're on air. I know you've been patient. You've been holding. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing, Ellen?
I'm good.
Good. This is Jack Dalton, by the way. So
it's Jack Dalton. Hello.
Talk about storytellers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when you guys were talking about storytelling, I said, oh, I've got some ideas. But show ideas, one of the ideas I had was Anchorage is one of the most remote metropolitan areas in the world. And I don't know that people actually consciously think about that because we're so connected and it's only a three-hour flight to Seattle. And then as far as history and storytelling is concerned, there's still people around who remember things like the earthquake and statehood and stuff like that. And those to be able to prompt people or bring in someone who was there, even people who were there during World War II, there are a few people still around for that. And they're, you know, people are getting older as time goes by, and it'd be great to get some of those stories.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, well, I'd like to. I like talking to older people. I'm rapidly becoming an older person, so. But I think that we have lost a lot by not talking to some of our real old timers, our elders. I know now that there's a great effort to record people, but you know, back in the '80s, boy, I worked in roadhouses when I was out in Kennelake, and the stories they would tell. And this was before I got into, you know, writing or. Long before radio, so.
Well, you know, I'm thinking that they have things to teach us. They went through, you know, a kind of depression, and we're going through a recession. And one of the things I got from my mom's kitchen was a depression cookbook, because I thought, I'm going to have to learn how to be more frugal than I used to be. You know, I just think that we're in a different era that way. We're going to have to be sort of make our own fun. And I would say that Anchorage and Alaska is a place that knows how to make its own fun, for sure. I mean, look at our symphony. I mean, if you want it, you make it here. Mm-hmm. And to speak to Jack's point about an isolated metropolitan community, that's what we are. So there's a lot of resilience here, and that's you know, some stuff that we can draw upon and bring forth in this show.
There's all, in terms of talking about rapid change, you know, it's easy to think that we're in the period of most rapid change, but if you go back and look at the history of this town, I mean, this is a town that went from World War II having about 3,000 population, and within 10 years, 30,000 population.
Yeah.
As a state where we went from mail being delivered by dog sled one day, and the next day it's delivered by air.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a bigger change than cell phones to internet any day. You know, so I think that talking to those folks can give you a lot of lessons in how to look mm-hmm. at the future. And I also want to pick up on the point of storytelling. Jack did a program at my kid's school, Chugach Optional, last year on storytelling and how to put together the elements of a plot. And I just want to, it was through the Artists in the Schools program. They wrote a grant. And I want to tell you, Jack, that you had a huge impact. I was just talking to my son's teacher. She said, well, I've gotten started on writing. And the fact that Jack went in there and talked about those things still is totally stuck with the kids. And they're so far ahead of where they were before because they know how to write a story and what the elements of the plot are. And so Jack, I think, is one of our unsung heroes that we ought to be talking about.
Yeah, and these kids are going to be the radio hosts of the future. They're going to know how to tell a story.
Got any more ideas to give us, Jack?
Oh, there's so many ideas, but I think there's so many people, because Alaska is such a new place and there are a lot of people who've moved to Alaska in recent years, that not everyone knows the history of the place that they call home now. They love it, but there's a reason why they love it, and that's because there's a history there that really speaks volumes as to the kind of place that Alaska is, so... I'm looking forward to what you guys are going to do.
Okay.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye, Jack. So, and other listeners out there, this is a call-in program. It's a new program, Hometown Alaska. We're going to have revolving hosts. There will be four different hosts, one each week, and I'll be one of them. Charles will be another. Charles Woolforth, Kathleen McCoy will be a third, and we have a fourth waiting in the wings. Not ready to divulge her yet, but... We will be doing that shortly. And you can call in with your ideas, comments, suggestions at 550-8433, 550-8433 within the Anchorage area or outside the Anchorage area. Call 1-888-353-5752. That's 1-888-353-5752. Or email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. And I'm not getting a whole lot of emails, though. I just want to get to one thing. Now that we are we've talked about journalism in general and the changes in journalism and the sometimes good, sometimes not so good changes that are happening. I want to talk about stories. Why are stories still important? How many times in this 40 minutes we've been on air have we heard the word story? I think, at least three dozen.
I think it's a common ground. I think the stories are often about, things that we all care about. So it's easy for us to connect. We all have a lot of similarity. So we live in an age of a lot of diversity, and yet sometimes these stories have a way of showing us how we are similar to one another. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, it's old. It's ancient. Storytelling is nothing of 2009. It's way older than that. And so I think it's in our genes, I think, and I think that's why it has so much power.
Charles, you're bursting at the seams.
Well, stories are really how we make sense of the world. It's where you take this continuum of your experience and you put a beginning, middle, and end on it, and you pick out what's important and the cause and effect. And so we think in stories, and we categorize the world in stories, and that's therefore how we share. And, a lot of my writing is writing about science, environment, and topics which can be difficult to get across to a general reader because maybe people aren't excited about the exact thing I'm talking about. But boy, once you start talking about the scientists themselves and why they got interested in those topics, or you talk about the people who are impacted by the topics and tell the stories about how that developed, you can write about almost anything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at John McPhee. He's written about some of the most tedious topics you could ever think of.
At great length.
At tremendous length. And yet the writing is just compelling because it's all wrapped within these stories and characters, real people that you get an insight into.
Yeah.
True. True. And he wrote about Alaska, one of my favorite books in the world. And, does it matter whether it's true, whether it's untrue, whether it's an urban rumor? You know, I watching Native Dancing, those are stories, pantomime stories, mm-hmm. and with the singing, telling the background. And then, there's all kinds of stories. Do they necessarily have to entertain, or do they have to inform, or what? Why? Why are we so riveted on stories? We want to hear more and more and more, you know? It's a human trait all over the world, I think.
To my mind, they have to be true on some level.
Mm-hmm.
I get very I think where the sort of pop entertainment becomes very tiresome is when it falls into these genre forms and it really doesn't have that underlying truth or reality to it. And what I hope we do here is pretty much stick with truth, things that are relevant. And my gosh, one of the things that I've learned as a journalist is that almost anyone you could talk to can be made into a great story.
Right,
everybody's
right,
had experiences that are interesting.
So let's go to the phones. Craig, are you online? Craig.
Yes, I am.
Hi, you have a very intriguing intro here. Ducks that hang over Anchorage. That was how you were you were described to me. Go ahead.
Yeah. They winter over here, and this is my 49th winter coming up in Anchorage, so it isn't anything new. They've been here forever. They used to be down in the cooling pond, but that electric plant closed up years ago, so they're gone from there. But there's other places that they hang out. For me, it's over by College Gate Elementary School in a little drainage that's over there, which I usually call the sewer pipe. And people pay no regard to them. Everybody can drive by and they can look at them, and there's absolutely nothing for them to eat. So for quite a few years, I've been feeding them. And if you're going to feed them adequately, which is somewhere around 3/4 of a pound per duck per day, that it takes a lot of food. I can never quite get up to that. But even at that, last year, for the past few years, I've put out probably about 35,000 pounds of corn per winter for them.
Are these domestic ducks?
It gets to be a big project. And what I'm not in favor of feeding ducks at all. I'm not in the slightest. I just don't want to see any animal starve, whether it's a duck or a human or anything else. And what I would like to see is a program where they were caught with those jump nets or whatever, and hopefully slaughtered either for the zoo or for human consumption. But I don't see any effort in that direction.
Craig, these are domestic ducks, like abandoned domestic ducks?
No. Yeah, you can see them flying all over town if you want to look.
Yeah.
In the winter, they're all mallards.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can see them down on the Westchester Lagoon, and in some years they've actually gotten frozen into the ice.
Yeah.
And it can be.
Yeah, and they're in several places here in town, over in East Anchorage, like I say, there's usually around us 700 is what I estimate that come to where I live to be fed. And, you know, we're just getting into it again. I never try to feed anything until Thanksgiving. Last year I had to feed a little bit earlier because it got cold quick, and then they're totally cut off from food.
Well, thank you for feeding them, but that's probably why they're over at your house, right?
Well, yes, that's why they're there, but other than that, they would be starving to death, and you can watch them do that if
uh-huh.
you want.
Uh-huh.
You know, and if you want to get my name and number, I can take you in the winter and have you watch while they drowned.
Yeah. Why don't you email your name and your number to hometownalaska@kska.org, because we don't give personal phone numbers over the air, okay?
Right.
Thanks for...
Right. I can do that. But I have heard of programs in the Midwest, one in Minneapolis, and I've never been able to confirm this, in which there is an attempt to kill them. In other words, they catch the ducks and then they kill them. And I have no problem with that. That's the solution I would like to see.
So you would suggest that the state or the city animal control do something about it? Open a hunt?
Or Ducks Unlimited or somebody get into the act. And it's only, from my point of view, it's only a matter of getting away from the animal cruelty aspect of it. Watching an animal with webbed feet and a bill trying to find something to eat in the snow is not the answer.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for bringing that to our attention.
And that brings up a whole other area topic is the Anchorage wildlife, doesn't mm-hmm. it?
Right. Let's hold. Thanks, Craig. I'm going to go take another call now. We have several waiting. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to line 8, please. Hi, David. Are you there?
Yeah. Hi, how are you?
Hi. What's your comment, Dave?
Well, first comment is I'm really excited about the lineup. Charles and Kathleen and you, that's going to make for some good listening in the afternoons. I had a story idea for you, or I have a bunch of them, and I was just thinking in terms of stuff that I would like to hear about. Al Bramstead Jr., who I think he recently retired from KTUU, he grew up in, television and radio here. From the very beginning of it, his father was one of the pioneer broadcasters. The guy's just an incredible walking history book, and there's some other
and a wonderful guy too,
and a great guy, and I think he could put together. Of course, I don't know if he could do this or not, but it seems like there's still a lot of the original engineer people that were working in the early days of broadcasting here. That would be a fascinating show. I remember going with Al's sister to pick up the nightly news, the 6 o'clock news at the airport that was on film that would be played in the evening here, and it's just that was like revolutionary to just have the same day.
Well, I want to tell a story about that, being a kid and watching a football game with my dad and thinking that he was the most amazing sports fan because he could always predict exactly what was going to happen in the game. Of course, the films were 2 or 3 weeks old.
He already knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of your stories, Helen, of driving to take the newspaper places. I mean, it really was a different era.
It was totally different. And I feel proud to have been a part of it. It's a part of Alaska that's dead and gone. Mm-hmm. It's like the Wild West. It does not exist anymore. Mm-hmm. So thanks for calling, Dave. I'm going to take some more calls.
Oh, go ahead. Mm-hmm. I could just throw it in. You know, we've heard from Governor Hickel all these years on all sorts of media. But his wife, Irma Lee Hickel, grew up here, and she is really an interesting person. Mm-hmm. This would be a great interview, I would think.
Everyone likes Irma Lee. She should have been governor. Thanks, Dave. Let's go to Holly on line 5, please. Holly, you're on air.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm the director for the Anchorage Waterways Council.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that an interesting topic might be creeks in Anchorage. Mm. We actually have more creeks in Anchorage than a lot of communities our size in the whole country. And it's amazing how many people don't know that we have creeks.
How could that be? How could anybody be that out of it?
I just spent the day at Campbell Creek Science Center with 200 fourth graders. And many of them didn't know that there were streams in Anchorage and have never been in the woods.
That's sad.
No, I think there's a good topic there. And I was going to suggest, Ellen,
since
folks aren't probably able to list all their topic ideas, I hope they do take down that email address, hometownalaska@ksk.org. I got to share something I learned about creeks today. I was talking to Vic Fisher, one of Anchorage's founding fathers. And he told me that the Chester Creek Greenbelt was all private land before it was made into a greenbelt. And the city actually put out a bond issue to buy the land and create the greenbelt. And we're talking about back in the 1950s and 60s,
mm-hmm.
which shows a kind of a difference. The first thing I thought when I heard that is, we'd never pass a bond issue like that.
Well, look how we struggle. Yeah, you know, there was something called the Bike Summit here a few weeks ago, and there were these people from Oregon and I think Boston, and they were, you know, talking to people in Anchorage who want a bicycle-friendly town, and basically the residents were complaining a little bit about how you couldn't get from point A to Z on our trails, that they kind of meander and you sort of take a little trip when you, mm-hmm. and they were bemoaning that, and these guys from Boston and Portland, I think, were saying, you know, you can't retrofit that back in. You know, once that's gone, so you don't, you know, they're really saying you don't know how lucky you are
exactly.
that you've got this and it's there.
Everywhere else, the creeks are in pipes.
That's right. Exactly. So sometimes we don't appreciate what's mm-hmm. right in front of us. So.
Well, you know.
There's a lot of really interesting things about our creek. I mean, there's some interesting historical things about our creeks. You know, we've got salmon runs in most of them, which isn't really a big deal for us living here in Anchorage, but people from outside are just, you know, agog when they find out. You've got actual salmon runs in your streams that run right through the city.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's wonderful. And we have those, some of the drains are marked salmon stream, you know, do not dump motor oil and stuff down them. And but I have to say the Camel Creek has been given a little more, visibility
attention.
Because they've built those nice designated little signs where it runs through the city.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Holly. We will put that on our list. And thanks for calling in. I wanted to share an email we just got from Tyler Rhodes at the Nome Nugget, of all places.
Right. Hi, Tyler.
He says, glad to hear of the debut of your show. He appreciates the warm words in regard to the Nome Nugget, and he wants to point out that he's got all of Kathleen's Alaska Press Club awards still hanging on the back wall there.
Oh, my gosh.
Covering
I have a habit
nasty
of
stain over
leaving
the wall.
My stuff around.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, Tyler.
He also mentions that he has lots of newspaper archives in the building. So
that's great.
Thanks to Tyler. And I'm amazed he's getting our show up in Nome.
Thanks, Tyler. It's great to hear from you.
Maybe I'm on.
Yeah.
Well, we have a few more minutes left, so let's go around the circle once again. What are you hoping to bring? What's your passion? What are you hoping to bring to this program?
I want people to call in.
Yeah,
that's what I want. I don't want to roll the truth downhill. I want to hear what people want to talk about, and then I want to facilitate that and make it happen. So I really hope people won't hesitate to pick up the phone or send us an email to hometownalaska@ksk.org. And, you know, I think we're talking about very human topics, and I think those are always going to be fun, explaining ourselves to ourselves a little bit. And that should hopefully we'll end up our hours knowing more than when we started and feeling a way about South Central Alaska that we didn't before we started. I hope. Charles,
I like the idea of keeping it positive. You know, it's really fun to hear about the great stuff that has happened in Anchorage, that has happened in the past. And when we talk about problems, I'd like to talk about solutions. One thing that I really don't like about a lot of talk radio is sort of the anger and sort of the venting quality, and I really hope to stay away from that. And I really want to talk a lot about education because, you know, I have four kids in school, so it's a particular interest of mine, but I think it is for a lot of people. And in terms of building community and building community connections, that's kind of where the rubber meets the road, is how you teach your kids, what you teach your kids, and what you contribute to that, whether you have children or not. We're all contributing, of course, through our property taxes. And Anchorage has fantastic schools. Mm-hmm. And there's really interesting stuff happening
there. A lot of variety and a lot of different people from all over the world coming to school here, which makes it fascinating to be here. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm getting a window on the university because that's where I work. And it's always fun to be at a university because learning is really fun. And basically, I think we live in an age when you can't stop learning. You have to keep learning. As you move from newspapers to radio, you know, I'm trying to move into multimedia. It's just nonstop. And so that having a university in the town is a lucky thing for us. And I'm, you know, that's the pool I swim in. So I will pull some ideas from there. I'll try to have my ideas coming out of the community, but I'll be tapping. If there's somebody at the university who knows something about this, try to get them here to offer what they know. So that's one of the things I'm going to do. Charles?
Yeah, well, I think building that university community connection is important. And I'm going to be looking for topics that we can talk about that involve everybody or that everybody knows something about, and then hopefully bring in expertise like you're talking about from the university to mm-hmm. connect to it. One topic I was thinking about is architecture and civic buildings, and talking about, well, what do we like about we've built a lot recently. What do we like? What do we don't like? And what do we like and don't like about it? And then along with that, it's how do we choose how to build these buildings? Mm-hmm. Is it more important for us that it fits into our community and our values, or more important to sort of get prestigious architects to come in and, mm-hmm. and build things that are sort of monuments and have an artistic expression?
Mm-hmm.
Really good reasons for both of those sides, and really says something about your values as a community as to exactly which one
right. You
put more emphasis on and how you marry them, hopefully.
Right. I know some big fancy buildings I don't even have a reaction to, and then others mm-hmm. just make me happy to look at them.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for joining me on Hometown Alaska, and we're out of time. Thanks to all of you who called in and shared your thoughts on Hometown Alaska, and thanks to the co-hosts Kathleen McCoy and Charles Woolforth. Kristen's back engineered today's program. BD Trantina answered the phones, and the recorded rebroadcast of Hometown Alaska repeats tonight at 10 p.m. Our email is hometownalaska@kska.org, and join me, Ellen, next week. Together we'll explore the Alaska Native Education Project on Hometown Alaska on FM 91.1, and my guest will be Carol Como, who's the Anchorage School District Superintendent. See you then. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated News and Public Media. An archived copy of today's program, additional information, and links to all the websites mentioned on today's show are available online at kska.org. Send us your comments and suggestions of things you'd like to talk about at Hometown Alaska, 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. This is KSKA Anchorage.